Welcome to Inside the Mortgage Mind, a Zenix podcast where you'll hear stories from professionals throughout the industry, from new LOs to CEOs, about their journey to achieving success. We hope these stories inspire and energize you to take your business to the next level.
So Katie Sweeney, I just got to tell you, when I saw you were on the calendar to be interviewed, I'm like, okay, this is going to be so awesome. Now I'm in Florida, thus the background. I got to, you know, on vacay, but you know, you got to work when you got to work and
got to do what you got to do.
Right. So I'm outside. So if you hear birds, I hear a bird right now.
Yep. If you're setting the vibe for the whole, I'm imagining I'm in the Midwest right now traveling and it's 35 degrees outside. So I'm like getting the Florida vibes from you.
Right. Right. So yeah, let's have some fun and relax together. And anybody listening in, get your atmosphere right. But
exactly.
Congratulations. I just want to put that out there before we start. Female, rocking it, running one of the largest organizations in the mortgage space. I mean, okay. Yeah. We have so much to talk about. So much. Okay, yeah. Let's just start with what have you learned over the last 2 years?
Oh my goodness. What have I not learned? Honestly, I think I've been in mortgage for close to 6 years now, which I realize doesn't sound like a ton of time for a lot of the industry veterans, but I've started to kind of hit my groove and my stride with the industry overall. But I got to tell you, jumping into a role like this, there really is not a whole lot to help prepare you for moving from a leadership role and a management role to the leader, right? Like there's a difference between being on a team and being surrounded by leaders and having a leader that you go to that can help support you in both directions. But taking that step from being a manager or a leader of a team to being the leader of an organization overall and all of the responsibility that falls into that, there's just, I feel like sometimes I don't have any children, but it's kind of like when you become a mom where you're like, there's all these things that nobody ever told me about. How did I not know that this is the stuff that you need to be prepared for? And I felt very similar stepping into this role because it's been almost 2 years since I took over AIM. I think the perception out there is that I haven't been in this position very long, but July of this year will be 2 years since I stepped in. I had the interim role for about 6 months and then formally took it over over a year ago. So I'm coming up on that 2 year mark of trying to find my place. And I think a lot of it, the biggest thing that I've learned is making sure that you take a step back and understand not what is the organization or what has it been, but what is your vision for what it's going to look like moving forward? And then starting to put a plan and a structure in place and understanding that it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. There are a lot of people who want to see change really quickly, but I am a big believer that change is it's the most effective when it's grown from the ground up, right? So when you have the buy-in of everybody that you're helping support and they're helping communicate that change and create the change, it sticks a lot better than if you just make a decision in a vacuum and tell everybody, this is what we're going to do and this is how it's going to go. Mm-hmm. And so taking the time and the space to sit back and say, okay, here's what we've done. Here's what was great. Here's what didn't work out as well. Here are things that I truly believe in, but also here's what everybody else around me believes in, because it's not just my perspective that matters. I'm here to represent a very diverse group of individuals and a very diverse team. And so that I think was the biggest lesson. Take a minute, stop and get an idea of where you truly think something should head and where the people who you support, or whether it's your borrowers or your team members or the members of your organization, whatever it is, where do they want things to go? And how do you create an environment that helps cultivate that vision and move it forward? And know that it's going to take some time. But if you continually make changes and you show people a track record and a trajectory of change, and they see that things are moving down the right path, you will start to get that buy-in in a more organic way. And I think those are the people who are the strongest advocates for you moving forward.
Well, 2 years in now, you just mentioned, you know, the big question is, what's the vision? Where are you taking AIM?
Yeah, So we use the moniker brokers are better. And I know that that can be a little bit divisive in the industry. And I understand that. I think when the slogan came out, it was a slogan, right? It was something that people said, and it helped unite an audience of people that didn't have a singular brand to operate under. So when you think about one of the most important things in our industry, brand recognition is a big part of that. And when you have 60,000 members that all have their own brand, that can be really hard to create an identity that people are able to associate with and that they remember and that they know to look for. And so I think the intention behind Brokers Are Better, it was really good. It was that unifying thing of, hey, we can all fall under the same umbrella. Here's a brand that everyone can use, that everybody can relate to as far as our membership goes. Because you got to remember, our members are the ones that kind of got left to the side a decade ago, and they've been fighting their way to get back into the industry and back into the good graces of consumers for quite some time. I think now I don't even want to say my vision. Our vision is to say it's not a slogan, it's a philosophy. We want to prove it. Why do we say this? Why are we telling consumers this? How are we justifying? And a lot of that is saying, okay, sometimes a broker is truly the best option, but they can also be the one to tell you that they're not. And as long as you are always doing the best thing for the consumer, you will be the best option for a consumer to start the conversation with. Maybe they don't end it with you, but if you can truly be that advisor and you can ensure that every decision that you make is putting the consumer first and that you have a borrower-centric philosophy internally at your brokerage, then we feel confident that we can continue to say brokers are better and mean it and put some weight behind it, right? So we're in that phase right now of how do we prove it so that we can keep saying it, so that it's not just a slogan, but it becomes something that has some teeth and some grit that can help really help educate people, because that's the whole goal. It's education on first and foremost across the board. And so a lot of our education is the why. Why do we think that that's true? And how do we continue to prove it every day?
So you took over midst of the pandemic.
Yep. Yes.
You're interim, then you're permanent. So have you made any changes that are systemic right now that you think you'll maintain over the years?
A lot. Yeah, we have made a lot of changes. The first thing was just putting a structure in place that was sustainable. So I think a lot of people that are familiar with the early days of AIM are familiar with a very intentional champion who was out there really pushing the message forward. But my fear has always been, okay, what happens if you don't have that one person anymore? How do you ensure that the organization lives beyond a single person or a single era of leader and can be something that continues forward for not 5 years or 10 years, but 15 or 20 or 25 or 30, right? Where we don't have an organization that has continually stayed focused and dedicated on this channel that survived, right? There's been a lot of ups and downs and changes in who we serve and who we don't serve and all of those things. And so we really have focused a lot on putting a structure in place of both full-time leaders that sit on the business side of the team, but also member leadership that are still active broker owners or loan officers that are out there running their businesses every day, and creating a balance between the two so that we have perspectives that come across the board. The association does have a business, right? We have to pay our team. We have to make sure that we can throw events and that we're doing right by our partners and making sure that everybody feels like it's a good relationship. But we also obviously have the member side, and without our members, none of the other stuff matters. And we haven't ever had member leadership that had structure. We've had leaders within our community, but not specific roles. And so we really took a step back and said, our mission is to protect, support, and grow. So we're going to set up a president and a vice president on the member side for each of those verticals. So we call them verticals. So our protect vertical, Brendan McKay is our president. Jamie Cavanaugh is our vice president. Our support vertical, Mark Summers is our president. Mike Cox is our vice president. And then our grow vertical, Tom Ollis is our president and Janine Kempfer is our vice president. Within each of those verticals, we said, okay, to protect our community, what are the initiatives that are going to provide the most protection to our channel? well. Advocacy and outreach. Those are the two things we're focused on. For the support vertical, it's membership and education. And for growth, it's channel development and impact. And so really giving a clear focus to every one of our member leaders that has joined the team, but also then helping balance out the business initiatives and making sure that all of the leaders, we actually have a leadership summit next week where we're bringing all 12 people together to say, okay, these are the business KPIs for the year, but these are the membership KPIs for the year. And what are we doing to work together as a collective unit to be as efficient as possible? Because we do have a small team, right? We only have about 18 full-time team members at AIM, and we support over 60,000 members. And we have 60 different partners, vendor and lender partners. So for that many people and that many relationships, we have a very, very small, very lean team, but we're able to run efficiently because we have this balance of leadership. And we're able to then sit there and prioritize and say, does this contribute to these initiatives that we know are our number one priority for the year? If yes, keep going. If no, it's time to pivot and find something that does.
Okay, well, that's a significant change.
We changed a lot.
I mean, to put structure in such a large organization, obviously past due, and you're right, instead of being personality driven or champion driven, it's got the structure to survive. So, my goodness, tell me this. What are you seeing? What's the forecast for the next year to 2 years? Because the industry at large is going through some shift. We're already seeing some layoffs. What are you forecasting?
Yeah. So going into 2020, pre kind of COVID era, and where rates got incredibly volatile, and then obviously, I mean, historically low, we really started to see the broker channel kind of take off. We were in that era of transitioning from other channels coming over to the broker model. And it all sort of halted when rates hit the floor because it became a refi market really quickly. And the broker channel, while very competitive in a refi environment as well, their bread and butter and their focus are those local relationships. And a purchase market is the space for brokers to scale and to grow and for market share for the channel to continue to get larger. And so we saw the last couple of years a little bit of a stall out where we maintained market share and maybe grew by a percentage or two each year, but we didn't see that rapid scale growth that a lot of people had projected going into 2020. I think we're coming into that market now. I think there are a lot of larger lenders and independent lenders that are out there that are trying to stay competitive in the immediate future, but we're going to continue to see a lot of layoffs. You know this better than I do. It's a cyclical industry. It comes around every, 5 to 8 years, depending on what market we're in and what other global factors are helping impact that. And so we really are trying to prepare our members to scale and to scale quickly. We've been saying for the last couple of years, keep hiring. Don't stop. Like, now is the time to bring people on so that you're ready to scale and to grow quickly when rates do shift. And so I think we're in a pretty solid position to continue to grow. And our expectation is that we're going to see some rapid growth for our channel over the next 2 to 3 years. We've been saying 25% market share by 2025. I really think we're looking at 30%+ by 2025. If you estimate that we're sitting somewhere between 20 and 22% right now. And we're already starting to see it happen. We have people reaching out to us. I mean, hundreds of people every week reaching out to AIM saying, I just got laid off from my lender. I'm a processor. I'm an LOA. I'm a loan officer. I've only been in the business 2 years. What do I do? And so we're connecting all of those folks with brokers that are engaged with us that have shown us that they run businesses ethically, that they're committed to doing things the right way, and connecting them to create job opportunities so that we can help usher as many of those folks as possible over into our channel to make sure that we're supporting growth for our members, but also to make sure that all of these folks that have worked really hard the last few years are landing in places that could be long-term homes for them.
Katie, you're in a significant position in this industry, and I love asking leaders in general, what got you where you are today? Like, what prepared you for this new role?
A lot of grit and a lot of grace. Those are the two. Anytime anybody asks what my leadership style is, that's the best way that I can encompass it. I've always been a very competitive person. I've always been one that wants to work really hard. I'm driven by solving problems that oftentimes people don't even realize their problems yet. I love the challenge of being able to maneuver and navigate things that other folks haven't been able to figure out yet or haven't identified yet as things that need to be worked on. I started in sports broadcasting. That's why my background from college was business and sports broadcasting, wound up in the healthcare world. The similarities between healthcare and mortgage are immense. There are so many things between those two industries that cross over. They're highly regulated. They're highly emotional decisions from consumers or from patients. It requires a lot of education to be able to advise somebody on the decision that they're making. There's a lot of regulatory oversight. So you add all those things together, moving from healthcare to mortgage. Yes, I had to learn a new industry, but I didn't have to learn a new thought process for how people operate within the space. And I think that really helped catapult looking at what is the mortgage industry not doing that we can pull from other consumer-centric spaces, but also understanding that the decisions that are being made are really heavy and really intense. And that requires a certain level of support and structure, whether you're the advisor, you're the underwriter, you're the executive at the lender, or you're the broker. The consumer needs bubble wrap when they're making these decisions, because it's a lot. For most people, you only make the decision about a home 3 or 4 times in your life, if you're lucky. And for a lot of people, it's even less than that. And so I think just having that knowledge and also just knowing, like, if you want to move forward, you got to grind. You have to grind. And taking those opportunities as they became available. I tell the story all the time because I think it shifted how I approached the industry so quickly. I got hired at a lender. So I worked on the consumer direct marketing side when I first started for Pacific Union Financial that eventually sold to Mr. Cooper. So when I was there, I got hired to run marketing analytics. So I'm a very math first kind of gal. And the woman who hired me to kind of learn the mortgage industry from her decided she was going to move to another opportunity, not 6 weeks after I started. And our chief marketing officer at the time was also not a mortgage person. He had come from a lot of like consumer product development. So we both were like, well, shoot, what do we do? Neither, we don't really know the space that well. We're still learning and navigating. So he started interviewing other people to come in and take that senior leadership role on the marketing team that I would then work for. And I sat in on those interviews and I was sitting there thinking to myself, like, I can do this. Like nothing that they're saying are things that I can't figure out. Like, this all seems very pragmatic. It seems very rational. Consumer direct in particular is so formulaic. It's a lot, like, it's not the same as building local relationships. A lot of it truly is a numbers game and lead buying management and lead aggregators. And there's so much math there that doesn't really have anything to do with mortgage. As soon as you learn the formula and you learn the lead aggregators, it's just managing volume and playing with those numbers up and down. So I went to him after a year, I don't know, 5 or 6 interviews with different people. And I said, I'm going to make you a deal. You give me 3 months to do this job. I will do everything that's required of the senior role and my current role. I don't need a raise. I don't need you to change my title. Nothing. Give me 3 months. And at the end of those 3 months, if I haven't earned the senior role, you can hire whoever you want and I will work for them until you can find somebody else to replace me. If you find somebody who's great, I'll work for them. No complaints. If I don't care for the person, I will stay until you can find someone to replace me. I'm not going to leave you hanging out, but you have to give me 3 months to try to earn it. Give me 90 days to learn this and to show you that I can take this over. And he said, okay, let's see what you got. And I dug in and I worked long hours and I asked a lot of questions and I found people who were experts in what they do, who had been in the space for a long time. I met some fantastic people who wound up being mentors over my entire career that I still talk to regularly. And at the end of the 90 days, he said, all right, you've got the job. And that mentality that, okay, there's a problem and I don't necessarily know how to fix it, but I know that I can figure it out. And jumping in and being gritty and just doing it, I think that hands-on learning and that willingness to put myself out there and to have the confidence to know that I can figure out how to solve it. It might not be perfect, but I can figure it out and I'm going to learn from it and I'll make it better the next time, has changed where I've been able to get and the pace at which I've been able to do it. April, a month from now, will be my 10 years since I graduated from college. So I've been trying to do this, the working world, for 10 years. I just turned 32 a couple of weeks ago.
Oh my God. 10 years.
10 years. Yeah.
You are.
Yep.
Okay. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Texas. I have a younger brother, but he's about 8.5 years younger than me. So I kind of say I grew up as an only child, but also as like almost a half mom by the time I got to high school, because I was driving Kyle around and going to all of his games. And I'm very close with my whole family, but my parents are totally self-made. I mean, I grew up in a great area in Texas. I'm not going to claim to say that I had a tough childhood. My parents were absolutely incredible. I loved where I grew up. It was an awesome place and I had the best time, but I also watched them work really, really hard. And they're both from small towns in Iowa. They busted their butts to get everything that they had. They worked really hard their whole careers to be able to build this life. And I was not one of those ones that took that for granted and said, oh, well, they have it, so obviously I'm going to get it. I took that and said, okay, well, I want to go out and do the same thing. I want to show them that I can also do that and that they can be proud of me and that I can help, you know, if they want to relax later in life, that I can be here to help support that. I played sports every sport you can imagine. I've played it. I think that just competitive nature from very, very young and being the oldest and also kind of an only child, and wrap that all together, and being very, very lucky with the family that I have and the support that they provide. It was kind of the perfect storm. And that story that I tell about Pacific Union is not the only story that I could tell about something where there was an immediate problem directly in front of me that maybe wasn't my wheelhouse, but being willing to jump in and just know you can figure, if you are willing to do the work, you can figure it out. And admit when you're wrong and know that you don't know everything and that you need to ask questions and that you can learn from other people. It's not about being stubborn and saying, I already know how to do this, let me do it. It's the, I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm going to figure it out, and following an outline and starting to put structure together that you can eventually build up over time.
My goodness, Katie, I did not realize how young you were. And 10 years out of college, you're running one of the largest organizations in the mortgage space. Obviously, your parents have modeled an incredible work ethic for you that you've brought into this workspace. So when I think about the kind of, I'm sitting there smiling going, okay, so she's an athlete, she handles problems. So my big thing with my children, and I have teenagers right now too, I should have grandchildren that are teenagers, but I started late. But I've always said to them, we're all going to have problems in life. There's not a human being in America, in the world, that doesn't have a problem. It's how you respond and react to that problem which will define you. So when you hear, if you ever ask my kids, if you say, if you have a problem, they're going to say, solve the problem. Solve it. What are you doing? So your mom, apparently your parents modeled that quite well.
Absolutely.
So can you give, let's end with this quick, let you finish with a story, because you said there's multiple times where you had that.
Yeah.
You share a time where you had an enormous challenge that you did not think you could overcome, but you were able to.
Yeah. I mean, I think we could use AIM as the example there, quite frankly. I had only been with AIM formally for about 7 months when I took it over in that interim role.
Meeting you. Yes. I remember meeting you when you first joined, and I'm like, she's outside of the mortgage space. How? Right.
Yep. So I was working at Arrive before, which was a little more my wheelhouse, right? I worked in product development I eventually moved from consumer direct to product development at Pacific Union. Which I also had no idea what I was doing, but they were like, we need a business person to learn how to build technology. And I said, sign me up, let's do it. What can I learn? And so Arrive was a very comfortable place for me. Once we decided to, once the decision was made that we were going to sell Arrive to an investor, which was absolutely the right thing to do for that system to help catapult it moving forward, I moved over to the AIM side. So I had, let's call it 9 months of between the transition from Arrive and then formally being at AIM, when I had to step in and take it over. And, you know, we don't need to get into the details. Everybody kind of knows that story. And if you don't, you can look it up and figure it out. But it was a very tumultuous time. And there was, because I had sat behind the scenes for so long, there was, understandably so, a lot of concern around what was going to happen to AIM when the champion and the martyr and the one personality that had been out there pushing things forward was no longer involved. right? What else exists? Is there even a team? Who's going to do things now? And there were just a lot of folks that didn't know me. I was comfortable sitting, I don't say behind the scenes in a bad way, but I was comfortable not being the face, right? I like working hard and leading teams, but I don't need to be the one that's out there. Honestly, I don't get excited about being the person on the stage. That's not something that helps motivate me in the morning. I'm willing to do it, but it's not where I kind of find my energy and my excitement. So I was sitting there saying, holy moly, all right, what are we supposed to, I have all of these partners that don't really know me that well, and I need to ensure a level of confidence in them. I have all of these members who I've never really engaged with directly, some right through Arrive especially, but in large part, not really, who don't
you
really
didn't
know
need to, right? That exactly. Wasn't your job.
It was not my role. And so I had a bunch of vendors who and lenders who had been around for a long time who said, who are you and what are you going to do? A bunch of members that sat there and said, I don't know you. You've never been a loan officer. You've never been a broker. What are you supposed to do? You don't know how to originate a loan. I said, fair. That's true. I don't. And then I had a bunch of team members that were all hired under a style of leadership that was very different from my own. And I remember sitting back in that moment and saying, okay, is my goal to get through and to find somebody else? Or is my goal to start figuring out how to repair and then hopefully reestablish our position and then grow moving forward? And after a couple of months of trying to wade through that, I said, I can do this. I really can. I think I can bring a level of stability and a level of structure. And that's building organizations and figuring out how to scale. I've always worked in a startup environment. Every company I've ever been at, healthcare, mortgage, whatever, very startup mentality, the small looking to scale or mid-size looking to scale. And so I know that that's something that I have in my back pocket, even if it wasn't necessarily in the structure that AIM needed or that existed here. And I had a lot of conversations. The one in particular that always stands out, and there were some fantastic people who reached out during that time. But Christy Furco, who I've always had a good relationship with, I've known since I worked at Pacific Union when she was at Flagstar. And she reached out, and I remember talking to her in this kind of a conversation and just saying, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. I don't know where to start. I don't know. Like, I know that I need to do something. And I'm at this point, I'm just trying to keep it together and make sure that we don't start bleeding left and right. Like, can I plug the holes and make sure that we're only taking on enough water to, we're not drowning yet, right? We're taking on water, right. We're not drowning. And she said, you're in the chair. You're sitting in the chair. Act like it. Like, you're in the chair. You need to own it. And that, just taking that, it was kind of the smack across the face of like, you know what? You're right. I am in this chair. And anyone who's not willing to respect that and have a conversation and give me an opportunity or a chance is not somebody that I need to be focused on today. I can focus on them in 6 months or in 12 months once they can see the history of action and what we're able to do. But I know that we can do it. And for those folks that are willing to give me that opportunity to earn their trust and earn their respect, I need to walk into those conversations knowing that I deserve it and that I can put something in place and that we can get this back on track and that we can get to a point where we're not just stable, but that we're continuing to expand and then eventually excel, right? And that was a big turning point to say, if you're going to get that opportunity, you need to own it and you need to act like you belong there and not be afraid to own the space that you're in. And I think a lot of women sometimes get hesitant to do that because it's the, oh my gosh, I'm going to be too aggressive. And then somebody's going to say that I'm being bossy or I'm being bitchy or I'm being whatever. Like, those are, you have those stereotypes that you battle in your brain already, but there are a lot of times where people, they need you to lead and they need you to be the leader and the boss and the person that's making decisions and the one that's helping create structure and stabilization. And I think that going through that, that was a massive, like, external reputation management and PR and crisis management and media management and all of these things that I had no experience in, but was able to sit back and say, you're smart. You're capable. Your gut has gotten you this far. trust your gut and make sure that you're surrounding yourselves with people who are skilled in the areas that you're not. And it's going to be okay. If you don't know the answer, somebody around you will. And I think as long as you always have that mentality of, I'm not the smartest, I need a team that's better than I am at the things that they're supposed to be doing and leading, you'll always be able to figure it out. And you don't need to be afraid to own the space and lead the group that's going to do it.
You know, it's interesting in listening to you, the one thing I hope everybody takes away, this is for any leader in America, female, male is irrelevant, is that you believed in yourself. And you believe that you could figure it out. And it begins with that. And no matter where you are, what field you're in, what job you're in, if you don't believe you can get it done, you won't get it done. And when Krista smacked you over the and said, you take over, and you're like, you're right, I can do this. That I can means you'll find a solution. And so, and that for every problem, there is a solution. You just have to look for them, admit when you don't know it. So what great advice for anyone listening in. You're creating quite a name for yourself in our industry. And I'm going to say our industry is now yours, right? But to think that you jumped into a chair, and I just want to give you some accolades for anybody listening in, they're probably already thinking the same thing. You jumped into a chair from outside the industry, technically, right? Because you had not originated from within, right? Like, how could you ever relate or really bring applicable solutions to an entire army, 60,000 people?
Yeah.
And for you to step there and be successful and be accepted is a huge feat for you. I just want to congratulate you as a leader that is really growing a career within this beautiful industry that I've grown up in. And I'm blessed to serve. And I appreciate the partnership that you have and that we've been able to bring solutions to your brokers. I mean, that's just a true privilege. And so congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I would tell anybody exactly what you just said, be confident enough to know that you can do it, but humble enough to know that you probably need some help to get it done. And I think if you can keep that in mind, there's really the world is yours. You can build whatever you want to build.
Now, are there any, okay. So I said that was the last question, but I got to have a quick question. Okay. Do you read any, are there certain books that you actually love that are.
Okay. So this is not going to be the answer that I'm sure you hear from most people. I am not a huge reader. I really am not. My reading is watching other people within industries or businesses or organization. And it's not what they wrote and put in a book. It's watching their actions and what they're doing day to day. I think you can learn so much more from watching how people operate when they're not expecting somebody to capture it and to put it into something that's curated. And so I really don't, I mean, there are some great books that are out there, great speakers that are out there. The books that I tend to pull towards are truly more nonfiction than motivational. That's just kind of a nice break for your brain. I'm a big Mitch Albom fan. Tuesdays with Maury was my favorite book growing up. I reread it every year or so just because I think it's nice. Yeah, it's a good reminder of centering yourself and truly understanding what's important. But I like podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. You can listen to it, consume it in a short period of time. I've gotten really into Ray Dalio lately. I think the principles are really fascinating. I think figuring out how to take what other people do, don't copy it. Learn from it and then apply it to yourself is kind of the most important part. But I like to watch people. I watch what you guys do at Zinnix all the time and how you scale and how you grow. Been figuring out what to do with AIM. It was studying other organizations that have already done what I'm trying to do and understanding who their audience is and what of those concepts applied to us and then how we can take that and make it our own so that people really buy into it and don't feel like you're trying to force something on them that's not truly for them.
Well, I certainly wouldn't be where I am if it wasn't for observing and learning from other people. And every person that's been in my life has been part of getting me where I am, the good and the bad.
Yep.
I know what I don't want to be, and I know what I do want to be as a leader.
Exactly.
And I'm prayerful that I'm following that every single day. And but God bless you, Katie. What a privilege it has been to have a few minutes with you.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. This is so fun.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to check back for new episodes of Inside the Mortgage Mind, a podcast by Zinnix, the Mortgage Academy. You can download our episodes wherever you love to listen to podcasts or on our website at zinnix.com/insidethemortgagemind.